This is an Algo FM News Exclusive.
Where to begin with such a story? I guess the beginning.
In part two of this episode, focusing on Reinhard Leech's bail application, I wanted to share a bit more of what he said about how he met Vicky, how he bonded with her minor child, and how she allegedly asked him to get a hitman to kill Arnold. In part one, I focused on Leech's version of events on the night Vicky was murdered, where he blamed Dylan Cullis, who's already serving time. And Leech, for the first time, implicated Vicky's husband, Arnold. When the story broke, a lot was said about Vicky being in a relationship with a man almost 10 years younger than her. And even more questions were asked when those arrested and implicated were just 19 and 20 years old at the time. Going back to Leech's lengthy affidavit for bail, he tells in his own words how he met and fell for Vicky. Please again note that this is just a dramatization and not Leech speaking in this audio.
A friend invited me to a braai at a friend's house. He convinced me to go. He said it's a beautiful girl's house. He told me the girl's name was Vicky. I never knew her before that day I met her. And we had a great evening and I really enjoyed Vicky's company. And from what I could tell, the feeling was mutual. Due to COVID restrictions, the decision was made to stay over for the night, and Vicky, myself, and my mate, we slept in the main bedroom on the same bed, but that night there was no physical interaction sexually between anyone. We were five guys in the house and Vicky, and we had a nice small party that night. We had alcohol, cocaine, it was Vicky's favorite drug, weed, mandrake stick, and Percocet. When we all woke up, we decided it's time to leave. Myself and Vic, we exchanged numbers and I went back to my parents' house. We started chatting on WhatsApp and after a while she asked me if I don't want to come back to her house to help her repaint the inside of the house. I happily agreed and joined her within 2 hours after she invited me. To be honest, we didn't start any painting that day. When I got there, we started drinking alcohol again, and she sent me to go buy cocaine from her dealer and to buy more alcohol, brandy and wine, which was also illegal due to COVID restrictions. We spent the entire day alone without any of the friends. She was my new friend, and we couldn't stop talking. I slept over again, and we shared the bed again. I really liked her and found her attractive, but I never made a move that night. We just cuddled. The next day, we invited the same friends over and partied again. We used the same substances again, and we never slept that night. Vicky and I, we spoke a lot about my ex-fiancé and a lot about our husband. Honorable Blanche and myself, we never met before. I didn't know who he was. She nicknamed him Duasi whenever she spoke about him. She never had something good to say about him. She explained to me what type of man he was and that he's a control freak. He had cameras all over his house, inside, outside, and he could access these cameras at any time via his cell phone. He verbally abused her, she said, and she also told me that he was 100% a narcissist. Everything was done his way, and if it's done differently, there will always be consequences. She also then told me that we should not date because I might get into trouble if he finds out about me. She made me believe that he's very dangerous and that her previous boyfriends left her when they found out Arnold that Blanche is her husband. I honestly believe that she lived in fear for him and what he's capable of when he's angry. She didn't want me to get hurt and she said that he always play dirty and will find ways to ruin your life. He never greeted me nicely. He just stared at me fiercely. He became jealous of the bond I had with child. This was confirmed by the child himself. He told me my dad is just jealous about how good we get along. He also told the child I was a bad person and that he didn't like me at all. Now, after about 2 to 3 weeks together, he hired a private investigator to follow me wherever I go, 24/7. He was also asked to dig into my past, to get dirt on me. The security guards at the gate was also informing him when I leave the residence, when I'm back. The private investigator even went so far as to get my ex-fiancée's cell phone number. He phoned her. She phoned me and told me about this private investigator that's on my tail and that I should be careful. After this, it felt like protecting them was the only option I had, and that Vicky and the child needed someone like me. By now, Vicky could see that I was a loving person who cared a lot about her and her child. She also saw in my actions that I weren't scared of anybody. She approached me numerous times asking me if I really cared for them. Obviously, I answered by saying, you know how much I care for you. She then replied by saying, well, then I must try to find someone who would kill her soon-to-be ex-husband, Arnold LeBlanche. At first, I thought she was joking, but she frequently asked me to find someone who will do it, to kill Arnold. With me being in the abalone industry, you meet a lot of really dangerous people. And after I saw the real fear in Vicky's eyes, I started to ask around if there's a hitman and how much he would ask me to do it. There was a few people I spoke to, and they all wanted money up front. And we made plans to sell a car and buy a cheaper car for myself, because I lost my car in the accident. But I couldn't get a loan from the bank since I resigned from my job. And she said she will buy herself a new car after the divorce. The difference in the price was basically 75,000 rand, and that would have been enough to get a hitman to kill Arnold.
I think it's important to remind you here that it is also the state's case that Vicky and Leach conspire to kill Arnold, and they named two potential hitmen who were approached but declined. One is also a state witness. At that time, as you heard from Leach, he didn't have a car. We know that he was involved in a horror accident near the Van Stadens Bridge that killed Mario de Rede Sr., a well-known stock car champion in Port Elizabeth. Leach says in his affidavit that he was living with his parents as he was unemployed, and his friend, Mario de Rede Sr., said he could live on his premises in Greenbushes for free. He refers to de Ridder Sr. as being a kingpin in the abalone industry, but says he was never involved until de Ridder Sr. died in the accident. Leach said he had 100,000 rand to invest in their new venture and registered a company with de Ridder Sr. called Kabeja Ship Chandler. They registered this on the 4th of June 2021, just 3 days before the accident on the N2. According to Leach, de Ridder Sr. asked to drive his Audi, and they had a flat tire. When Leach got out to check on it, a delivery van then slammed into the car, leaving de Ridder in a coma, and he died a few days later. During de Ridder's funeral, his half-brother, JP Pretorius, said they were frustrated by how the accident scene was handled by police, and expressed the family's disappointment that the truck driver had not been arrested. I want to take you back to a snippet from episode 3 of Journey to Justice, where JP Pretorius spoke at de Ridder Sr.'s funeral.
We were frustrated by how the accident scene was reported and done by the police. The truck driver has not been arrested for manslaughter, which he should have been. And we need answers as a family. We will never rest until we get the answers to the questions that we have. We will take the story further in his honour, because I know that's what he would have expected for himself as well as for his children. We won't rest until we have the answers to all the puzzles that must still be put together.
Pretorius also made specific mention of Reinhard Leach and said the family acknowledged the trauma he had to endure in this accident that left him unscathed.
Reinhard Leach, the dad of us, see them in full faith, but as you can see, we the family and you and the trauma that you must hear more in the scope of yourself and for.
The de Ridder family has appointed a lawyer who at the time told me that they appointed someone to look into the circumstances that led to the accident. I spoke to Warrant Officer Majolo Nkohli from the police to ask him what was happening with the culpable homicide case. It's been over 3 years. The only thing he said was that the investigation was at an advanced stage and that forensic evidence was still outstanding. I asked him to elaborate. What forensic evidence was outstanding? Have they found the driver? And Kochli would not elaborate and told me it was sub judice. Leach says in his affidavit that it was only after Derrida Sr. died that he actively became involved in the abalone industry. He said when Derrida died, he lost his 100,000 rand he invested, and he didn't know where to claim it back. And he also still had 60,000 rand he had to pay in on his car insurance. It is now in the hands of Judge Mandela Makaula to decide on whether or not Leach will be granted bail. He said he could afford 10,000 rand. He promised not to interfere with state witnesses. He would not commit any offences. He said he will not evade his trial. He wants to find a job. He will live with his parents. He says he already handed in his passport and it expired already. He said the fact that he had no assets further proves that he's no flight risk. Leach also brought up conditions in prison, which is something many trial-awaiting prisoners do. He says it's dramatically overcrowded, riddled with gang membership. There's a constant threat of being assaulted either by inmates or officers from correctional services. He said access to ablution facilities and sanitation was unacceptable, contributing to the spread of diseases. For me, the most practical reason he gave was the need to consult with his legal representative on a regular basis. And Leach has already had 3 legal reps. And now he seems to be settled with Jodeen Kurtzen from Legal Aid. And with him not being in prison, it will make it a lot easier for him to prepare for his trial. But let's look at the state's case, keeping in mind that they now have more evidence since they managed to decipher all the digital data on the phones, SIM cards and other devices seized by police. After an almost 3-year wait, State Prosecutor Marius Stander finally flew to Cape Town to get the information on an external hard drive. It was 1 gigabyte. So this is phone calls, WhatsApp messages, videos, and an important piece in the puzzle that not only the state, but the defense were waiting for. During Leach's bail application, the state made a few comments which indicated to me that they found a substantial amount of incriminating evidence after going through the digital data. The lead investigating officer, Lieutenant Colonel Kana Swanepoel, made a few statements in his affidavit, creating the impression that they are more confident now than ever before that they have a prima facie case against the accused. In Swanepoel's affidavit, he says the following, and I quote, "Each allegation that I refer to is at present supported by evidence contained in affidavits, exhibits, voice recordings, cellular phone downloads, cellular phone billings, and other digital evidence." He says, shortly after Reinhardt moved in with Vicky, Arnold started investigating him and scratched into the past to get dirt on him, even going as far as making contact with Reinhardt's former fiancée. We heard Leach referring to this in his affidavit. Swanepoel later says that on 11 August 2021, Arnold referred to Leach as a cocaine kop parlemoen smuggler and on the same day said to a family member that he hopes Reinhardt kills Vicky. He quotes what he calls Arnold's exact words, where he said, "Yep, hoping he moor her dead." The state goes further by saying that in late August, Arnold started broadcasting that Vicky was pregnant to show that she was a person without moral values. About a month later, Leach told Arnold that they had lost the baby and they were both very sad about it. The state says they have a message Arnold sent to Leach to tell him that the baby was not even his and that Vicky knew how to abort babies. The lengthy message is in Afrikaans, so I will translate it for you to get the gist of the message. Again, the state says they have this message as evidence. Basically, Arnold tells Leach that he has nothing against him. He has respect for him for the way he treats his son. He said the message was not malicious because he does not want to ruin his relationship with Vicky or cause any heartache for Leach. He then tells Leach, allegedly, that Vicky knows how to abort babies and have done it before, He further states that he foresaw this happening again. The message continues with Arnold saying to Leach, "You can see how many medications she takes every single day. It's an old habit." He mentions Vicky's love for cocaine. In the message obtained by the state, Arnold said Vicky tried to commit suicide in the house while their minor child was playing video games in his room. He allegedly tells Leach that Vicky was with other men before him, whom she met at the Wild Hog. He says he knows these men and he mentions their names. The WhatsApp message goes further, stating that Vicky sent naked pictures of herself to these two men, who then sent it to their rugby team. He says a rugby coach at Woodridge also received the naked photos and informed him. He said the only reason Vicky did not want them to meet was to hide the truth, and he questioned why nothing about their relationship was ever posted on Facebook. We would have to wait for forensic evidence to find out if Vicky was pregnant and if she did have an abortion. I want to take you back to my controversial episode 18 of Journey to Justice, entitled Codeine, Cocaine and Contradictions, where I specifically addressed Vicky's pregnancy. The first time I heard about the pregnancy story was when I wrote my feature article about Vicky, and it was her cousin Leonie who spoke to me at the time on record. Here is a snippet of our conversation.
I know she was pregnant from him because she phoned me. She said to me, "Leonie, I'm pregnant with Leach's child." And I said, "How do you feel about that?" She said, "I'm happy. I'm very happy." I said, "And how does he feel?" And she said, "No, he's okay with it."
So did she lose the baby or did she abort the child?
She said to me she lost the baby. It was in the first trimester, yeah.
Do you think she really was pregnant?
I don't think Vicky would lie to me about that, definitely. She would have played complete open cards with me.
A second source told me exactly the same story, that Vicky said she was pregnant with Leach's child, roughly about 6 weeks before her murder. But when I spoke to a third source, who was also very close to Vicky, I was informed that she was never pregnant and that the doctor blamed her hormones for a false positive. The state further claims to have a voice recording where Leach and Arnold discussed using other phones. The state says their analysis of the various cell phone data and extractions from the phones will show that Leach used three phones, interchanging them with four SIM cards. When Leach allegedly asked for a car to go to Cape Town to get a gun to kill Vicky, he spoke to Arnold on the phone, who allegedly paid for the vehicle with a tracker device, by the way. The state says they are in possession of a recording of this conversation. Lastly, the state divulged in their latest affidavit that Leach started using a new SIM card after the murder, and he continued to communicate with Arnold on this number. Lieutenant Colonel Swanepoel says, according to their evidence, 32 phone calls were made between Leach and Arnold in the week leading up to the murder. A further 9 calls after the murder, and he points out dates, including conversations on the day before and on the day of the murder. Until next time, podcast family. Remember, you can still send me an email with your thoughts on this case on journeytojustice@algofm.co.za. That is a capital J and the number 2.
That was an Algo FM News exclusive.